It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And now on to our local reporter roundtable, where we talk about what's making news across the state today in Peoria and Springfield. Joining us now to talk through those things in those respective areas is Tim Shelley, news director for WCBU, Peoria Public Radio. Tim, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Also with us, Sean Crawford, news editor for WUIS NPR Illinois in Springfield. Sean, welcome back to the 21st Show to you as well.
Thanks, Brian.
And I should mention to listeners, in order to accommodate everyone's schedules, we tape this conversation on Thursday afternoon, but you can always let us know what you thought by emailing talk@21stshow.org, talk@21stshow.org. All right, Sean, I want to begin with you. This is a wild story out of Carlinville. There is a funeral home there that is under investigation. What's happening with that?
Well, this all happened, came to our attention, rather, last week, end of last week, in which the Sangamon County coroner, Jim Allman, held a news conference, which is quite rare for the coroner to do. And he was contacted by a local hospital here in the area in the county that said, we have a body that has been in the morgue for more than a month, and nobody's come to pick it up, even though the family has made arrangements with this funeral home from Carlinville. Hines Funeral Home is the name. And the coroner said he contacted the family. The family says, oh, we have cremated remains already. And turns out it was not the right cremated remains because the person was still in the morgue, this family member. And more investigation of this situation has determined that this is not uncommon of what's gone on there. There are other families that have reported similar situations. And also, Allman went to the site, the funeral home, and with some other authorities, and when there said that he discovered three bodies that were not refrigerated properly, had been decomposing, in fact, so far gone that they had to be identified scientifically. So this is under investigation. The funeral home has not commented about it at this point, so we're not sure how far this is going to go, but certainly, as you said, one of the stories that made people take note of, because they're like, what is going on here?
Yeah, and it hits on so many taboos of our culture, right? And in the way we, you know, try to show respect for the dead. Did they say, I mean, is this, obviously funeral homes are state regulated, state licensed, but is there potential criminal liability here, or is that to be determined?
Well, it is to be determined, but certainly there are law enforcement organizations who are involved in this investigation. Also, the state's financial professional regulation agency has also been involved. So we're not sure where it's all at this point. Nobody is saying that, but I thought the coroner made an interesting quote. It kind of stood out to me. He said, in 20 years of doing this, nothing like this he's ever experienced before. And he called it unimaginable what these families are going through. And, you know, imagine that you get remains of a loved one and possibly have it in your home, you know, in an urn, something like that, some container. And turns out it's not the right person. So it's definitely got people, I think, worried of what's going on, and I'm sure we're going to hear more about this in coming weeks.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a story I'm definitely going to continue to follow, this one. All right, Tim Shelley from WCBU in Peoria, let me bring you into the conversation now, and we're going to shift to talking about a carbon capture pipeline that was the subject of a recent county board meeting in Tazewell County. It did not get the friendliest reception. What happened there?
Yeah, it definitely did not get the friendliest reception from the a group of community members who have really banded together in Tazewell County against this pipeline. And I know Sean's familiar with similar groups down in Springfield, and there's many groups across the state where the pipeline is, or one of the pipelines is supposed to run through, where citizens have done this. But essentially, there's just a lot of concerns. There's concerns about the companies using eminent domain to take land. There's concerns about safety in terms of what would happen if one of these pipelines ruptured. And there's just some people, environmentalists, who say this really isn't a viable solution for climate change.
And so what happens next? What are you going to be watching for as this story continues to unfold?
Well, some of the advocates are pushing for the county to do a moratorium on development, which the county says they believe their ability to limit development of the pipelines very limited. What's really the thing to watch, I think, is this process with the Illinois Commerce Commission, which currently has a construction application before it. And they'll have to say next year in terms of whether or not this project can move forward in Illinois or not, ultimately.
Interesting. Well, this is a story that I think, again, will continue to unfold. And as you mentioned, we're seeing this kind of thing pop up in different places around the state. Sean, I want to go back to you. And I guess while we're sort of on the subject of politics, there's going to be a summit coming to Springfield. This is sponsored in part by the University of Illinois Springfield. It's about political polarization. We're actually interviewing one of the keynote speakers, a political scientist, on our show on Monday. But what can people who attend this expect?
Well, I think it's going to be an opportunity for some conversation, which is actually, as you are well aware, it doesn't seem to happen as much, at least some civil conversation about democracy and some of the politics that's out there these days. And it's going to bring people of all different facets together. Journalists are going to be involved. I know some others as well. And really, the goal, I believe, is to try to find some common ground and actually maybe, again, find some ways that we can work together going forward. I don't pretend to say this is going to be the total solution, but I think it's good to just at least have some of this talk going on.
Yeah, dust our hands, problem solved, happening in Springfield on Monday and Tuesday. Let me first remind listeners, this is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're doing our local news roundup in this part of our Friday program. We're talking with Tim Shelley, who is news director at WCBU, Peoria Public Radio, and Sean Crawford, news editor at WUIS, which is NPR, Illinois, in Springfield. We're not taking calls live because in order to make our schedules meet, we taped this part of the conversation on Thursday afternoon. But we do love hearing what you think about our program. You can leave a voicemail anytime, day or night, 217-300-2121 is the number, 217-300-2121. All right, Tim, the Catholic Diocese of Peoria is restructuring. What's happening with that?
This has been an ongoing conversation for a little while. And like a lot of other Catholic dioceses across the country, they essentially have been seeing lower numbers of people attending church. And the number of priests is also decreasing, and the priests who remain are aging. The average age of priests is getting older, and all of this kind of cumulatively snowballs together into the diocese looking at reducing the number of churches they operate.
How are people reacting to these changes? Nobody likes to see their local parish shut down.
Well, absolutely. Nobody likes to see their local parish shut down. I think the diocese is trying to strike a balance between sustainability and also making sure people don't have to travel too far. They have a stated goal. They don't want anybody to have to go further than 30 minutes to be able to attend Mass. So it's definitely a very sensitive issue, and no final decisions have been made yet. That decision's expected to come out mid-next year.
Changing topics now slightly, I think people are pretty familiar with different types of awareness months, awareness weeks. We're in Hispanic Heritage Month right now, which goes from mid-September to mid-October. Breast Cancer Awareness Month is October. But this was a new one on me, and that is National Diaper Needs Awareness Week. And you talked to someone, though, who said that the families who need assistance with things like getting diapers is really increasing. So say more about that.
It is. I talked with Loving Bottoms Diaper Bank in Galesburg, which serves a multi-county area, including Peoria.
I love that name. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Loving Bottoms. Peoria and Tazewell counties. But I mean, essentially what they're saying, a large factor is inflation, quite honestly. There's more families contacting them for assistance with acquiring diapers for their babies than really ever since they started back in 2015. They say they distribute about 55,000 diapers a month, and there is a wait list with some of their partner agencies as well. So, I mean, there's definitely a burgeoning need for people who need assistance just acquiring this for their families.
Yeah. And for anyone who's ever had to take care of young children, that is one of the most basic needs. And sometimes many, many times a day. Fortunately, we've been beyond that for a while in my family. But Sean, I want to come back to you now and shifting gears yet again to this time about Millikan University has made an announcement of something called the Big Blue Pledge. Millikan, of course, in Decatur, Illinois. What is the Big Blue Pledge?
Well, basically what Millikan is doing, and I found this actually quite fascinating, and we're seeing it, I believe, at many other schools, especially smaller universities. Millikan is a private school based in Decatur. What they are doing is they want to try to help some of these students coming in who say, you know, college is too expensive for me to go, especially at some of these private institutions. So they're actually doing a couple of things. The pledge is a four-year pledge to provide free tuition for students who come in if they meet certain requirements, and they would make up the difference with this through Pell grants and some other awards and fundraising that the foundation there has come up with. Also, Millikan is lowering the tuition rate for all students by about a third starting next year. All of this would start next fall. And they're doing that. And they said one of the reasons is people look oftentimes online, they see a tuition number and they say, that's, you know, too rich for me, I can't go. Even though most of these schools do offer financial aid packages once you start talking with them, and they will often come down on that figure. And they, I believe, think that this has been hurting them to have a higher figure out there. So they're bringing the number down, and they seem to think that this will work for them and probably get more students coming into the campus. Now, I should also mention the University of Illinois Springfield this week also announced a program that would do something similar for the four-year new student. It's not a pledge, they're calling it Prairie Promise. So another program, but it's very similar, and it would use MAP grants. If a student could qualify for a MAP grant, they likely would be able to qualify for this and possibly be able to go tuition free for the 4 years that they're on campus.
MAP grants are, what is that, monetary award program? That's low income assistance for low income Illinoisans to go to college. Yeah. Okay. Sean, I think probably the last thing I want to ask you about is officials recently broke ground on something called the Shields Sports Park. Now, I'm old enough, I know you're old enough to remember when that was going to be an entire outlet mall developed around the Shields store, a big sporting goods store on the south end of Springfield. What can Springfieldians expect from this sports park?
Well, you're right, Brian. This has been talked about in some fashion, some development in this area for a number of years. This is off of Interstate 72, like you said, on the south end of town. Shields is a big sporting goods store that it's a chain, but there are only a few of them around, and it does draw a lot of people into the city. Around this property, they want to create this huge mini acres of sports park. This would include baseball, softball fields, lacrosse, soccer fields. It would also include this inflatable, air-inflated dome to have a bunch of indoor courts for various sports. And really what they're looking at is to try to cash in on the travel teams that you all often see, often where these people will come from all over the country and their kids will come and play in these different tournaments. And according to Springfield, and this is their numbers, they think the project could mean $25 million in direct spending a year in the local economy, up to 50,000 additional hotel rooms booked a year. So it is a big deal. It's expected to be open in 2025 if everything goes well. It's a public-private partnership. So the city is providing some hotel motel tax money, and they've lined up some other financing for it. I know there are still people locally who are, you know, questioning, will this ever see fruition? Because we've talked about things like this before.
This is like the monorail.
It does seem
exactly.
It does seem as though that it's moving forward, and you know, we'll see what happens. But it could be a very big deal for the city if that happens.
I suppose if it goes through, you and I are going to have a really hard time getting a table at Ingrained, which is a local restaurant.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right, Tim, we're coming to the end of our time together, but maybe while people are outdoors at the Shields Sports Park, if it happens in Springfield, they may want to use a new way to fend off mosquitoes that was developed at the Peoria Ag Lab. What's the story there?
Well, believe it or not, it's actually mustard. When mustard seed meal is applied in a certain way, it can be deadly for mosquito larvae. And Specifically, young mosquitoes come up in stagnant water. So when the seed meal is applied in stagnant water, essentially the young mosquitoes eat the seed meal. It's toxic. They die. And essentially, that's kind of where things stop. It tries to stop the problem of mosquitoes, thriving before they become a problem, so to speak. So that's what the Peoria Ag Lab's kind of exploring there.
Before they become a problem. That's good to know, because I was thinking, am I going to have to rub 57 varieties on my arms before I go out at night? But that seems like that is not the case. Is this going to be a home thing that people can sort of make themselves, or is this, targeting future commercial products, some years down the line?
Yeah, I think they're looking more at commercial products. So the seed meal is kind of a what's left over after they make the condiment, right? So they're looking for kind of like a value added for this product that's usually just considered a waste product. Find another utility for it and, do something useful with it. And I think that they do that on a mass scale. They're, looking to see if this could potentially be a really viable product on the market.
Well, I'm all for reducing the number of mosquitoes. They have been fierce the past few weeks here in central Illinois. Tim Shelley is the news director at WCBU, Peoria Public Radio. Sean Crawford is managing editor, news editor at WUIS, NPR Illinois in Springfield. Sean, Tim, thanks so much for being with us again on the 21st show. And on a more somber note, Illinois and Chicago football legend Dick Butkus died yesterday at his home in Malibu, California. Born in Chicago during the war, Butkus started playing for the University of Illinois in 1962. On New Year's Day, 64, he helped the team win the Rose Bowl over Washington. Butkus went on to a professional career with the Chicago Bears. Considered one of the greatest linebackers of all time, he was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Butkus is survived by his wife, Helen, and their three children. He was 80 years old. More to come after a short break. Stay with us.